Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Lake Orion, Michigan, and played collegiate golf at Oakland Community College and Coastal Carolina University. In 1990, he turned professional and has played on the following tours: PGA, PGA Tour Champions, European Tour, Nationwide Tour, NGA Hooters Tour, Gateway Tour, and eGolf Professional Tour. He has played professional tournaments in 26 different countries. His name? Tom Gillis. And I'm honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Tom Gillis, arguably one of the one or two best golfers in the history of Michigan. Tom, welcome and honor to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with your childhood, your mom and your dad growing up in Lake Orion, Michigan.
Yeah, I grew up on the lake back when it wasn't known as like really nice living. Now all those homes on Lake Orion are million-dollar homes. We grew up in a cottage, three-bedroom, one-bath cottage. My dad worked for GM, and my mom she worked part-time for my grandpa, who had a county business in Lake Orion. And like I said, we grew up very middle class. I think my dad probably, most he ever made was about 48 grand a year. And I had a brother and a sister, and we were a mile away from Indianwood Golf and Country Club, and I started caddying there. And mom and dad had introduced me to the game when I was 10 or 11, but I didn't take much of an interest. I was kind of into chasing frogs and doing all that other stuff. And then once we started caddying at Inniewood, I got the hook for golf, and it came pretty natural pretty quickly.
What's the biggest thing, Tom, you learned from mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Well, my mom always said, you know, I always thought she was maybe, you know, feeding me a line. But she says, you can do anything you want. You're capable of doing anything you want. And I still remember her saying that all the time, which was really good advice. And my dad, he was just a competitor. He had like 400 or 300 games, and he played golf, played college basketball, and you know, he was good under pressure, I would say. That's what I really got for him. And he always said, you just got to keep working and working and working and working. And that's kind of, I have a son playing college basketball up here at Siena Heights, and that's what I tell him. I said, there's no substitute for hard work, and there's a lot of truth to that.
You learned a lot of things caddying at Indianwood Country Club.
Yep.
Iconic. Talk about that and the famous 18th green.
Yeah, Indianwood gave me everything. I'm so thankful for the Aldridge family. Mr. Aldridge took me under his arm. He treated me like one of his own kids. We could have never afforded to have been members there, and so they gave me carte blanche. I don't think I had a number. All my food was free. The golf was free. I think after my first year on the PGA Tour, I came back into his office. I said, can you at least give me a number to sign food now? And he reluctantly gave me the number, but I said, you know, you guys have been taking care of me forever. And so it was just a special place for me, and you know, only being a mile away, you know, it somewhat kept me out of trouble, and I had a passion for it. And 18, I've seen it. It's changed over the years. When I caddied as a kid, it was a par 5. It was the biggest green in the country at the time. Maybe world, I'm not sure, but probably not the world, with all the Scottish golf courses and the two greens over there they had, but definitely in America. And a lot of bets have been settled there on 18.
How old were you the first time you broke par?
I think I was 15 at Oxford Hills, up in Oxford, yeah.
Okay, you went to Oakland Community College.
Yep.
All right. Your first big win was the 1994 Michigan Open, which launched you into the mini tour. Do you remember that victory?
Yeah, that's my probably the most emotional victory I ever had. Prior to that, I just won the fall before that. I was down to $2,000. I was running out of money. The members at the club were sponsoring me at the time, and from Indianwood. And I was thinking, well, this is it. You know, we're running out of money. We got tour qualifying coming up, and if that doesn't work, I'll probably have to go work in the business and work in the pro shop. And So I beat Jim Dent and a guy named Clark Dennis by five. And it was Jamaica Open in Montego Bay, and it was, I think, $26,000 or $27,000 for first place. And that gave me an incredible amount of confidence because they were tour players. And then the next spring, I won the Michigan Open in 94. And, you know, living in Traverse City like I am right now this summer, every time I drive by the resort, it's still it was the first time I ever won anything where I was driving out of there and I was like, wow, they can never, this is, cannot be taken away from you. I'm on the trophy no matter what. It was very special.
The best one arguably right now is Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
Last year, he won $60 million.
Yeah.
Says his caddy, Ted Scott, gets 10%. That means the caddy won 10%.
Yeah.
That's more than Jack Nicklaus won in his entire career.
Yeah.
He won like 5.8. Talk about the numbers and the zeros today, Tom.
Well, it's a different world, and I guess that's just evolution, you know. That's just the way it goes. Jack and them will tell you about what they played for, and you hear what they won when they won, and you're just like, wow, that's not, that's not very much money. That caddy gig, if you get the right guy, is a good deal these days, especially on that live tour, you know. But, you know, the money's just, it's gotten, and I hope it doesn't kill some of the motivations. Obviously not going to affect Scotty one bit, but some of the younger guys, I wonder if they get up to 10, 15, 20 million in earnings. It's a very tough game to play for a living. I never really was that flush, so I always had to have that edge. Every day there was an edge, and I always prayed that I would have enough, you know, where I didn't have to worry about it, and I never really got there, and I wonder if that would have hurt me, if I it would have taken some of the drive away, because for me, I got to be honest with you, it was a job to me. You know, I wasn't really a very good student in high school. My dream was just to be a really good club pro in the state of Michigan. I never had dreams of playing the PGA Tour.
We're talking to Tom Gillis, and I'm Jack Rasula. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the 4 inches top of the head between the ears.
Yeah.
And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm yours, Jack Crisula. We're with Tom Gillis. He's played professional tournaments in 26 different countries. Tom, golf, the shot is about 1 to 1.5 seconds. So 6 minutes of hitting golf shots on a round for 4.5 hours. Golf is all about between top of the head, between the ears. Talk about the mental aspect of the game.
Well, that's the key. Once you get to that highest level, that's what sets anybody apart. You know, all the players have the skills. If they're there, they have the skills. So if you can get to a point, every player wants to get where Scotty is right now, where you're into this, I call it just this most peaceful bubble that nobody can penetrate it. Nothing can set you off or make you emotional in any way, shape, or form. And you're just in that zen state. And there's several different ways. You know, I used to do a ton of deep breathing, self-guided meditation. And I'm sure a lot of those guys, they don't talk much about it, but a lot of them are doing it. And just because the pressure can get so big. I was just anxious before it started. So I had to, like, in the morning of a final round, it was like I had to just lay down and just breathe and calm down. I think I was built more to play, like, linebacker or something, because I was just ready to go. And that's the opposite of what you want in golf. It's like you want to be in that sedated, zen, calm state where nothing can affect you.
Scratch golfers talk about that they play each hole backwards.
Yeah.
What do they mean?
I'm not really sure what they mean by that, because I play it the other way. I would be like, okay, let's just, all you can do really, you know, anxiety and tension comes from thinking in the future or in the past. So if you're thinking in the future or the past, you're not going to be in the moment. So for me, when I was playing my best, it was like, okay, this is our job right now. We need to get that ball to this spot right here. And that would all the focus would be. And so, like you said, it doesn't take very long to hit the shot. You just got to be incredibly committed to what you're doing and stay in the present time. So if you're going ahead and heading ahead, you're going to be anxious the whole time.
Okay, let's go back to the summer of 2015, the John Deere Classic.
Yep.
Arguably your most famous event.
For me, yeah.
Walk us through it.
Yeah, you know, it was funny. I came in that week. I hadn't played very good at all year. I was very frustrated. Wednesday, I didn't even go to the golf course. I was just kind of ready for the year to be over. And if that was the end of it, you know, and I wasn't exempt, I think I was almost 47 at the time. I think I was about a week away from turning 47. So I didn't have any expectations. I got into a little bit of a groove early in the week. And then come Sunday, I felt incredibly, I made about a 25-footer on the first hole, and I felt so calm and focused. And I think I birdied three or four out of the first five to get in there. And, you know, we had it. We hit a great 8-iron on 16, and it went about, you know, it was probably the adrenaline. Went about 10 yards too far over the green. I didn't get it up and down. And I didn't birdie 17 from 235 yards at par five. And then got in the playoff with Spieth and got in the right rough on the second hole and tried to, you know, push it up through these trees. If I wasn't playing him, I probably would have chipped it out and took a chance. But he was number one in the world. He had a rabbit's foot in his pocket at the time during that stretch. So he, you know, you're playing with against somebody like that, they tend to force you to do things that you might not normally do. But looking back, I don't have any regrets, because if I would have chipped that ball out in the fairway and then didn't get it up and down and lost, I think I would still have a hard time sleeping. I went for it. I didn't know if I'd ever be there again. Probably wasn't at that age going to be there again. So I'm happy with it. I'm content with it. I would have liked to have won it for sure. But, you know, it was a good memory. And then the other one, I finished second to Roy at Honda in 2012, where me and Tiger finished at 10 under. I think Tiger finished an hour ahead of us, shot his career low round. And I played with Roy the last round, and he went to number one in the world. It was the first time he went to number one in the world that day. Those are some good memories there, you know. And I think what's satisfying for me is, you know, when you're playing well, when you were playing well and you were on your game, it was as good as anybody's in the world. Unfortunately for me, I wasn't that type of player where I was that consistent, and that's what separates it.
When you watch today, a 600-yard hole. They're hitting it 360,
yeah,
Striping it down the middle, and they're hitting a 7-iron or whatever second shot.
Yeah.
I would do that, but maybe with 2-3 woods in between, okay?
Yeah.
The distance, the accuracy, when you watch that, what do you think?
Well, the game's changed so much with the size of the head, the ball spinning less. It's just a different world. You know, I mean, people have heard it all the time, but when you grow up on those persimmons with a wound rubber band ball, and the head was so small, you really couldn't go at it 100% every time, because you're going to mishit it. It's going to spin up, and it's not going to go very far. So we ran, I would say, back in the day at around 75-80%, because we could get the proper strike on the ball with a small club head, and it wouldn't spin out of control. So then it would fly flatter, and it would release a little bit. So these guys, they grew up on these 460cc heads with less spin. From an early age, they're letting it go. They're training their bodies or their brain more than anything to let them swing that fast.
Your professional career, 34 years, from 1990 to 2024. Talk about that phenomenal chapter of your life.
Well, it was a journey. I mean, I never would have thought I would have made it that long. I mean, like I said, just within the first 3 years, I was down to $2,000 there when I won the Jamaica Open. So I thought I was within months right there of going to the pro shop to go work at the country club. And then in the fall of 2006, I lost all status anywhere, and I was 38 years old with a son. And I was really at crossroads there. Came back to Lake Orion. I said, I think I'm done. I made a bunch of calls to people in the Detroit area, talked to a couple teaching pros, found out what their day consisted of, how much money they were making for how much effort they were putting in. And I'm like, man, I don't know if that's me. So I sat there all winter and then picked up, moved the family to Florida, found a coach, a guy named Jeff Leishman, who coaches a young phenom right now on tour. His name's Luke Clanton. And Jeff and Belinda are some of our best friends of this day down on Jupiter. But he put together a plan, and by 2010, I was back on tour, and I had all my success really from 2010 to 15, 16 in there.
Talk about the pressure of these kids that got to go somewhere on a Monday to qualify in the hope that they get into the tournament.
Yeah, I did a lot of that. You know, I mean, I think I was fortunate that I did have sponsors, you know, that were helping me out, especially when I got to probably 1995, I had a guy from Red Run, Jerry McWilliams, who was a great sponsor. But there's pressure. That's never going to end. I think some guys can handle it. Some guys can't. I enjoyed the adrenaline rush of those Mondays because, first of all, the odds aren't very good that you're going to get through. They're only giving you four. It could be 100, 150, 200, who knows. The odds aren't very good, so I didn't feel as much pressure as that as if I did if I had a putt to win something that would set me up for maybe the next 5 months financially.
We're talking to Tom Gillis. When we come back, we're going to ask him about the king.
Yep.
And I'm Jack Criswell, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Crisullo. We're with Tom Gillis, 34 years professional golfer. Okay, let's talk about the king, arguably the father of athletes and marketing in America.
Yep.
Nicest guy in the world.
Yep.
Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, the first time I saw him, I think it was probably, I want to say 1981. He came to Inniewood for the March of Dimes, and my mom got me out of school and my uncle, and we went up there and... Man, all these people around that first tee, and I watched him tee off, and, you know, how everybody admired him. I thought, man, that'd be a fun career to be that good. And that's really my only real interaction. Well, I ran into him at the Bay Hill a couple times. I'll tell you a funny story. Greg Chalmers was there at Bay Hill, and he just won the Australian PGA and the Australian Open in the fall. Greg's the nicest guy you ever met, and there was one rule in Arnie's clubhouse at Bay Hill: do not wear your hat. So I was sitting with the vice president of the tour. We were having breakfast, and Greg's over there with his hat. And I said to Andy Pastor, I said, man, Greg's got his hat on, I think. And Arnold was in there. He was eating with some people. I go, man, that's probably not going to be good for Greg. So he starts walking over to Greg. Well, Greg tells me after, he goes, I think he's coming over to congratulate me for the Australian Open and the PGA. And he goes, hey, you got to get that hat off in here. And Greg is so humble. He was so embarrassed. And every time I see him to this day, I remind him of it. He goes, you're never going to forget that, are you? I go, no.
He arguably put golf on TV, right?
Yeah.
For the average person. And who else has a drink named after him, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable.
Yep. No, he was a legend. He drove it. Very charismatic. And it's probably what took us to another level. And the guys that they're playing for now need to be thankful for people like that along the way.
All right, let's go to the GOAT, Jack Nicklaus.
Yep. Well, I like I said before we talked, the show started, I was a member at the Bears Club for 12 years, so I got to spend some quality time with him. And, you know, I asked him one time, it was in the summer, he came in and I was the only one in there eating lunch. There was not many people around in the summer down in Florida. Most people have other houses. And so I was in there in between sessions, hitting balls and practicing. And he sat down and he said, can I join you, Gillis? And I'm like, well, sure. You know, and I'm thinking, yeah, you can. It's your club. So, you know, we always talk to Ohio State, Michigan football and tarpon and snook fishing and stuff like that. I never really asked him any golf questions. I just didn't want to be that guy. And so we were walking out together and I said, sir, I got to ask you one golf question. I said, you got 18 majors, and I'm sure there wasn't one ingredient. I'm sure there was several ingredients. But if you could lean on one ingredient, if you thought of what set you apart, what would it be? And he said, Tom, if I took you out on the first hole at the Bears Club at 210 yards, I put the pin on the front right over the bunker. He said, could you hit it 40 feet left and never look at the flag, completely ignore the flag? And this is an honest question. Could you completely ignore the flag? And I said, no, probably not. I go, I'd probably mess around with the face at the bottom, just maybe try to hold it a little bit open to move it over that way. He goes, I never did that. That was it. That was the extent of our golf talk.
Okay, the man won 18 majors. There's 4 years, the Masters, the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, yeah, and the PGA. He won. He came in second 19 times, Tom.
Yep.
Came in third 9 times. That's a total of 56, first, second, or third in the majors. He'd have to do that like 13 years in a row, every one of them.
Yeah.
Talk about that achievement.
Well, the longevity is I think it's the most impressive part of it. Plus, he maintained a family. A lot of that is, man, he said it many times, a lot of that is Barbara. She was a big part of all that. There's no way you can have that much success and not have a good support group around you. And she's the first lady of PJ Tour Wives. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough to get to know them very well. I played in Europe with Gary, his son. So being down in that area, they're just a great, they're really good people, good family. Barbara, she'll meet you once. The next time you see her, she'll remember your name. It's amazing. I don't know how she does it. It's absolutely just phenomenal what she can do. She met my wife one time, saw her 2 years later, and as soon as she saw her, hey, Jenny, how are you? She's that type of person.
All right, speaking of longevity, the Black Knight, Mr. Fitness, golf's global ambassador, arguably he's traveled more than any human being in the history of the world, Gary Player.
I mean, he carried that torch. He's been all over, and you know, he stayed in great shape just so he could
With your 26 countries, he makes you look like a piker.
No, he's been way more than that. There's a lot of guys that have more than I have. I think I'm actually up to 32 now, but whatever. You know, there's guys that have 40, 50. Gary's probably jacking them all. You know, they're designing those golf courses. They've been probably 100 countries, I would have guessed, you know. But, no, he's definitely a legend. He drove that sport out of South Africa, and a lot of great players follow. You know, Ernie, Louis, Charles. I'm probably missing Frost, David Frost. It goes on and on and on. You know, it's a golf mecca down there. Retief, you know, Goosen.
So. Okay. Tom Watson.
Yep. I played with him. I played with him Sunday at Greenbrier one time. That was a real thrill for me just because he's one of the legends. Same thing. We didn't talk much golf. We talked fishing and hunting. And it's funny how a lot of golfers seem to have that in common. Sometimes they just don't really want to talk about golf when you're on the golf course. Talk about stuff that relaxes you, you know.
All right. Tiger, for 12 or so years, he had a run unparalleled in the history of golf.
Yeah.
Tiger.
Yeah, one of the most explosive players I've ever seen. Unfortunately, I never got to play with him. Played with a lot of other guys. I'd miss him. He was either in group in front of me and group behind me. What he's done is just fantastic. I mean, with all those records, the power. You know, we were always wondering how his body would hold up because we'd never seen that much torque and rotation at that speed. And plus he trained so hard. I think he probably overtrained to some extent. I think he'd probably tell you that looking back now with all the surgeries. Not so much the back, but the knees and stuff like that. But there was nobody more dedicated to his craft than him. That's just, I thought he was probably the most dedicated, the most focused.
All right. Speaking of longevity, Bernard Langer, the man is 67 years old. He's still competing, right? Still on the leaderboards on Sunday. Yeah. He turned pro in 1972. He's won 125 tournaments. Talk about Bernard Langer.
Well, he stands the test of time. You know, I know Bernard well, spent a lot of time with him, flown back to Florida many times with him off the Champions Tour. He lives it, you know. I mean, he works at it. He wakes up Monday morning after we get back, and he's back in the gym, and he that's what he does every day, trains, practices. You know, he's just It's amazing. Some of that's, well, a lot of it's effort and work ethic, but some of it's DNA as well to be that healthy that long. That's not very common. Your spine's not meant to be rotating like that for 45, 50 years like he's done.
Rory McIlroy burst onto the scene, phenomenal. Could never win that fourth, the Masters. Finally did it.
Yeah.
When he's on, there's nobody like him.
Yeah. Well, he's explosive as well. I think you could see how much that Grand Slam had weighed on in the last 11 or 12 years, by the way. What was going on in the last nine holes. There was a lot of drama there when you're hitting 70, 80-yard wedges in the water. You know, it tells me a guy that's that decorated of a player really wanted that bad. It was very hard to watch. I'm happy for him. I'm glad he got it. He's a good person. He's a great member at the Bears Club. He's friendly to everybody, and I'm just glad he got over the hump.
Boy, that Sunday at the Masters, him and Justin Rose. I mean, talk about the ups and the downs with Rory. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Captivating.
Yeah, I think for Roy, I mean, if you were to talk to him, well, just watching it, anytime he had to curve shot or whatever, he was phenomenal. And then anytime he had something that was pretty linear, pretty straightforward shot, he struggled. He had a hard time getting his mind quieted down. When he drove it left under the tree over 15, I said to my wife, I go, watch this. This is probably going to be the end, could possibly be the end right here. He's going to hit a great shot. And he slung that 7-iron about 40-yard hook. He was doing stuff like that great, but anything straightforward that was kind of bland, he was struggling with. So it meant a lot to him, there's no doubt. And I think it was good for the game. A lot of people tuned in that day.
All right, one more.
Yeah.
Golf's world ambassador, Chichi Rodriguez.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really know much about Chichi, but he was the ultimate showman, I'll say that. One thing I remember of him is I was watching the U.S. Senior Open at Oakland Hills, and I remember him hitting some iron shot in there on the last. It just it seemed like it went to about a foot. Big old hook and iron. I was like, just a homemade golf swing. It was kind of cool to see.
All right. We're talking to Tom Gillis. When we come back, we're going to go back to August 21st, 2024, a year ago, at Warwick Hills Golf and Country Club. And I'm Jack Pasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Crisullo.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble.
The great Ernie Harwell.
My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God.
And the voices of our generation.
I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis.
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohon. I'm Jack Crisullo. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Tom Gillis. Played professionally 34 years, 26 different countries. Let's go back to August 21st, 2024, where it all started.
Yeah, well, you know, my first PGA Tour event was at Warwick Hills. I Monday qualified in, and my last one was there as well, the Ally Challenge last August. It's just felt like it was time. Had a bulky back, arthritic back in the thoracic area. Couldn't put as much time in it, and my play was starting to wane. And I thought, you know what? This is as good a time as any to do it. You know, this is where we first started. This is where we'll end it. And it's only 30 minutes from my hometown. So it was a very emotional week, for sure. It's something you'll never forget. And I was just glad that I had all my friends and family to come out and support me. It was really nice.
When you put your head on the pillow that night, Tom, what did you think about?
I thought about my son more than anything because he was a freshman and we had to say goodbye to him in the parking lot because he headed up to Alma. He played his first year at Alma basketball, and I was more concerned and stressed about that all week than I was the retirement. So I think when I put my head on the pillow, I was just wondering how he was doing because it's the first time he's going to be that far away from, you know, mom and dad and his sister. The golf-wise, I don't think I thought much about it, and it was late. We flew all the way back to Florida that night, so we're pretty tired. But I think as the days went by after that, I was like, wow, this is really over. This is it, you know. And I don't have any regrets, though. I'm glad I did it when I did. I don't sit around every day saying, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done it. I don't have that. There's none of that at all in me.
All right. You've played in a million pro-ams.
Yeah.
Are there one or two stories that just stand out?
Well, probably one of the more entertaining days I ever had is a Colonial Pro-Am. I played with Jim McMahon of the Bears, and he showed up on the first tee in bare feet, had his hat backwards, had a big chew of tobacco in, and he had a cold beer in his hand. I go, wow, this is going to be interesting. And he drank a beer a hole for 18 holes, and he was incredibly nice to everybody he came across. And we talked a lot about football and stuff. And the topper, though, was I had this caddy out of double jointed left arm, and I think we were on like the 14th or 15th hole at Colonial, par three over the water. And Bill said to him, his name's Bill Harkey. Bill said, I bet you $100 I can throw this ball right on that green. It was about 130, probably 135. And Jim said, there ain't no way you're going to do that. And I was like, oh, here we go. Because he's done it before. He usually gets somebody every week in the pro-am for a cool hundy, you know. He threw that thing. It sliced so much, but you could hear his arm, his left arm, was double jointed. It was the worst sound in the world. It went right up there, landed right in the middle of the green. Old Jim just stood there with his mouth hanging. He could get over it. He's like, here's your 100.
They tell a story about Jim McMahon, Brigham Young, you know?
Yeah.
First round pick of the Bears.
Yeah.
He comes to Lake Forest to meet the head coach, Ditka.
Yeah.
The Bears.
Yeah.
And Ditka's out in the cold waiting for him. And here comes the limo, pulls up, and here's McMahon with shades.
Yeah.
And he's got a beer, and he's got another beer for Ditka. He says, here, coach, let's have one together. That's how he met Ditka.
I can believe it. He had a lot of moxie,
sure. Remember what he was doing with Roselle, Nike and the Roselle?
Yeah, a lot of moxie. I still run into him at pro-ams, like charity events. He's funny.
Okay. Legendary. The Masters. The aura is unmatched in America. How so?
I don't know. I wish I'd know if Jordan Spieth would have been a little kinder maybe in that playoff. I would know. That's the only major I never played. I did go there once when I was down at Coastal Carolina College. A bunch of us went over there, walked around a practice round. It's just the most special thing you'll ever see. It's just, it's just such in great condition. It's almost like you're walking in heaven if you were a golfer. It was just, I don't ever want to go back unless I'm in the event, and I've never been back. So, but I watch it every year.
Golf in heaven. St. Andrews, the home of golf.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. I went on record many times with our friends to say, peers on tour, I'm like, if I could play a British Open at St. Andrews and that was it, they told me I'm done, that'd be good enough for me. And in 15, when we lost that John Deere to Jordan Spieth, back then they used to have the highest finisher could get on the plane that night, and we chartered a plane, the tour did, and he could go to the British Open, the highest finisher. Well, that was me. So I got to go over there to St. Andrews. It was the last British Open I ever played in 2015, and it was just incredibly special. I think you become thankful for your whole career when you're walking on those grounds. You're like, wow, it's come full circle. Is it as good a career as some of the other guys? No, but we're still here. We did it a long time, and we had longevity. You get respect for that.
Back in June, J.J. Spahn won the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Okay? The payout was $21.5 million.
Yeah.
Spahn was paid $4.3 million.
Yeah.
Robert McIntyre, $2.3 million. Victor Hovland, third, $1.5 million.
Yeah.
How high can it go?
Depends on how much the TV wants to pay for those rights, I don't know. I don't know if it'll continue to go. I would think we're probably holding pretty steady right now. There's no question Mickelson and Liv pushed us to some of this. We went down in the basement and found $400 million as a nonprofit, which is kind of interesting. But
that's something. Say that again.
I think we're probably sitting here holding pretty. I don't know if it's going to go up much. If not, I would see it maybe coming back even. Who knows?
Tim McCormick,
yeah.
Gentle giant from Clarkston.
Yeah, I know.
He talks about that the greatest challenge in sports is to manage prosperity.
Yeah, well, I think that gets back to having the team around you. I think if you have a good team around you and you trust them and you listen to them, you're in good shape. But the guys that seem to struggle in any sport, one, they can't say no. And two, they might not have a good enough team around them that they can trust. And it happens every year in every sport. And it's kind of sad. I have a really good friend who's getting ready to turn 50. He won 5 times on the PGA Tour, Carl Peterson. And, you know, he's got a great management team. And he kind of shut it down when he was 41. He's almost 48 now or whatever. He got so bored, he wanted to open business, do something, do that, you know, and his management team told him, they said, the only thing you can do is nothing, because you got enough. You're going to ruin this by trying this, you know. If all you have to do is nothing. Well, he struggled with that, but it was great advice, because they're like, don't try anything crazy. You're in good shape. And I just thought that was really, you know, that story seems like it fits into what you're saying about what Tim was saying about the prosperity. It's kind of like Watson said about when you hit a really good shot Sunday late when it means a lot, how do you overcome that good shot? Because it sends you a massive boost of adrenaline through you, and you can spin out. And then you're too over the edge. You know, you're trying to sit right on that happy fence.
All right. Today, you're the golf ambassador for High Point Golf Course in Traverse City.
Yeah, it's a real cool experience up there. Tom Doak's first design, he designed it when he was 26 years old. Then they went under in 08. Hops Farm bought it, and then they went under, and a friend of mine, Rod Trump, bought it a few years ago, and Tom came back and revived it, and it's a really special place. I'm glad to be part of it up there. It's a private golf club, and it's the only greens he ever shaped himself. He did them twice, and it's just for a Hall of Fame designer to be able to walk that property daily, it's pretty nice.
And to be in Upper Michigan in the summer, can't beat it.
Well, that's how it started. Rod goes, you want to spend summers in Traverse City? And I said, Rod, anybody from southeastern Michigan wants to spend the summer in Traverse City. So true.
So, all right. Tom Gillis, thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Thank you. Not so much for what you've achieved, but the manner in which you've done it.
Well, I appreciate it, buddy. This is cool. This reminds me of that radio and TV class I had in high school. I wonder if I can take a picture of that and send that out on Facebook to all our Lake Orion friends. Everybody would be like, man, Mr. Saunders was his name. And it was a cool class. We had this studio, but it wasn't this nice.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Brazil. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Spohom. Believe in yourself.